everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with Tom Fairbanks. Tom, you had the forecast up on your screen as you were doing your preparation for your news inserts. Did I see that right, that there is, that today is the end of the excessive heat warnings?
That's what they're saying on the National Weather Service website.
Wow, that would be great after the hottest July on record, certainly here in Arizona. Welcome to the Buckmaster Show. We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. They have the naming rights to our studio, and we are glad they do. And the studio is part of the growing Bustos Media Tucson presence. We now have 5 radio stations in this one building, which is great. The latest acquisition, a very popular station called The Drive. All right, it's Friday, July 28th, 2023. The radio station is KVOI 1030, Tucson's trusted source for news and talk. We're beginning year 14 in January. I stopped saying anything to do with 13 after some bad luck, misfortune, a little bit that has befallen my family. So I'm no longer using the word 13. So I'm saying we're going to be beginning 14 in January of the radio show. 36 years on TV and radio in Tucson. We have our worldwide live listening on our podcasts, buckmastershow.com. When we do our telephone interviews, our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Friday, we do some media partner shout-outs. These are folks like Dylan Smith over at TucsonSentinel.com. Dylan's been very, very helpful. We have an agreement where he puts up a link right there at Tucson Sentinel to the Buckmaster Show homepage, and Dylan's been a great supporter since we started our program in January of 2011. We have Dan Scheer and his team at Green Valley News and Saharita Sun, big supporters. Tucson Local Media Group, they have a couple of publications very well known, like Tucson Weekly, Inside Tucson Business, Oro Valley Explorer, Marana News, Foothills News, and Desert Times. My co-media host is Eddie Celaya. Eddie with me in studio. Eddie is a breaking news reporter for the Arizona Daily Star, and he's host of the Here Weed Go, Weed being spelled W-E-E-D, Go podcast. Eddie graduated from Pima Community College and the University of Arizona. He's been with the Star since May of 2019. He is listening to what I say very carefully today, because 4 weeks from today, Eddie will be over in this chair as I journey on a little vacation. So Eddie's going to take a shot at hosting the Friday show. So listen very carefully, Eddie. Great to see you again, by the way.
I am all ears.
All right. Let's introduce our Friday Focus interview. Coming back to the show, Leah Marquez Peterson, who was elected to the Arizona Corporation Commission in November of 2020. As the first Latina to serve in a statewide seat in state of Arizona government, and the only commissioner not based in Maricopa County. That's still true, isn't it, Leah?
That is.
Great
yeah,
to
thanks
see you,
for
by
having
the way.
Me, Bill.
All right. She is the former president and CEO of the Tucson Hispanic Chamber. It's been in Tucson business for many years. Among its many duties, the Arizona Corporation Commission regulates utility services and railroad and pipeline systems. Arizona is one of only 7 states with a constitutionally formed corporation commission, and one of only 13 states with elected commissioners, like Leah. In other states, the commissioners are appointed by either the governor or the legislature. Again, welcome back to the program.
Oh, thank you. Great to be here.
All right. The big story, of course, is we're all keeping our fingers crossed through this just record July heat. Will the grid hold? And Arizona this week saw some all-time highs in usage. And Texas also clocking record demand. I don't know if we are connected at all with this PIM interconnection, which oversees power supplies. I think they've got 12 or 13 different states. But they issued a warning Leah, as you know, that it was an through the heat wave, an emergency alert went out. Bottom line, should we be worried?
Well, this is something that's vitally important to folks throughout Arizona. I mean, we know it's life or death in Arizona if you're without electricity, especially in this incredibly hot time, and the need for air conditioning and cooling centers and so on. So we've been working on this at the Corporation Commission for months, years in preparation for this summer. This is not something that we take lightly. Beyond making sure that we have energy reliability and the right resources in place, we've also beefed up and worked quite a bit on customer assistance programs for the utilities. So back in March, and I believe I was on your show about that time, mm-hmm. we hosted an energy reliability summit to look 3 to 4 years out. Mm-hmm. We also hosted a summer preparedness meeting, which we hold every March mm-hmm. to talk about, okay, to Arizona Public Service, Tucson Electric Power, and others, how are you prepared? What have you got in place beyond what you generate as energy and what you're going to purchase for mm-hmm. energy? Mm-hmm. And so we get assurances at that time that they're prepared and they're looking at weather forecasts, economic projections, they're looking at customer growth within their territories. All of that plays into, are we prepared and can we keep the electricity running during this very hot time? So we've been assured that obviously there's always risk. There's microbursts or things occur that take poles down. But what can we do to assure that to Arizona that we are keeping energy reliable?
Yeah, we had I've been in town 35 years and was it last week? That Monday storm, kind of the first monsoon storm, I'd never seen anything like it. And we were lucky because up Swan toward sunrise, power pole after power pole went down, these wooden poles. Then on the south side, just this week, power poles went down. I know TEP is trying to replace those wooden poles with sturdier metal poles, but that's really expensive, and that's a small portion of, I guess, the total poles. Are mostly the poles are wooden, I guess.
Right, and so think that 6 months ago we were having conversations with our utilities, making sure that they had adequate supply, they had excess supply, transformers, poles, and otherwise. We saw some supply chain issues, you mm-hmm. know, certainly coming out of the pandemic, but they're prepared for this. And so the goal now is to get those back up and running as quickly as possible. And I know they're working diligently in this intense heat to make sure that we're all reconnected.
All right, let's bring in Eddie Salaya of the Star.
So what do you see as the role of renewable energy sources like solar being in the state? Can renewables ultimately end up replacing much of the fossil fuel kind of burden, or is it something that's always going to be a supplementary form here in Arizona?
And that's a good question, and we have debated this for years at the Corporation Commission. Renewable energy, which is solar, for those listening, wind, it could be, you know, other hydrogen. There are a lot of new technologies coming along, plays a vital role. TEP itself made a commitment to 70% renewable energy by, I believe it's 2035. So you're going to see aggressive growth in utility scale solar, which are the big solar panels you may see south of the airport, or residential solar. And we're seeing that throughout the state. Can we be 100% renewable energy by a certain year? Time will tell. I mean, at this point, as a commissioner, I'm fully supportive of 100% carbon-free resources by 2050. I think any utility executive that sat here in front of you would tell you that last 10%, we're still figuring that out. Mm. Whether that could be small modular nuclear reactors, which are carbon-free, or some type of renewable natural gas or carbon capture on the coal plants, we don't know yet. And there's a lot of new technology and advanced systems that folks are working on. So it could be, but at this point, you know, fully supportable of renewable energy, and Arizona really should be the king of solars with our sun that's out so often.
Should these renewables and that move towards them be driven mostly by market forces, or is there a role for the government to come in and say, hey, we, because of the effects of climate change, we need these sort of I guess, changes?
Yeah, and that's another great question we've been debating for years. In 2006, the commission and the then commissioners mandated about 15% requirement on renewable energy for the state and asked and mandated that the utilities go that direction. They had to subsidize that with ratepayer dollars. And so we move forward and we're about that percentage now. And this was about the year that they were going to get that accomplished by 2025 approximately. So 4 years ago, when I came on to the commission, we were in that same debate. Should it be mandated? Should we force this or let market conditions derive when this occurs? After many years of debate and lots of conversations, we did not mandate what percentage by what date, but instead embraced what the utilities have done, which is make individual commitments. So APS has their particular goal, 100% carbon free by 2050, and midterm goals before then. TP, which is a totally different structured and resource mixed utility, has their own goals that they're working towards. So I think it has really worked out well in that we have individual goals for very different utilities that are moving forward ultimately to be 100% carbon free by 2050.
You mentioned when you were talking about wind and solar, you said hydrogen. Do you mean hydro or hydrogen?
Hydrogen.
You mean hydrogen.
So the Biden administration has supported federal grants, and they're all the states, I think almost all the states, are participating in these hydrogen hub proposals. We're supposed to hear any day. It's right now. We'll be finding out if Arizona is one of the recipients of a hydrogen hub grant that ASU, UVA, the utilities, and others are working on. So new, exciting technology.
All right, getting back to the grid, the Governor Hobbs, called on the utilities, mainly TEP and Arizona Public Service, amid the heat wave to, I guess, be more prepared. You were saying that they've been prepared since March, and perhaps the governor should have been talking to the ACC, because you guys are the ones that control the utilities, not the governor's office. She was very concerned about cutoffs, that people that weren't paying their bills, behind on their bills, that they were going to get cut off. But nobody's been cut off this summer during this heat wave, right?
No, and you're absolutely right, Bill. When I saw her letter, and I don't fault her for asking, she is the governor, but I wish her staff had educated her on the role of the Arizona Corporation Commission. We've been working on this summer for years and had a very focused summer preparedness meeting this past March. During the pandemic, so a couple years ago, we also passed a moratorium on disconnects, which means you cannot be disconnected for non-payment June 1st through October 15th. It still means you owe the dollars that you're, you know, generating, but we'll work out payment plans. We have a lot of customer assistance programs through our utilities to help you, whether it's Southwest Gas, the regulated water utilities, or even the large electric utilities and so on. So she made a call or asked for the utilities to respond, and they have. I've seen that response, which is great. But happy to meet with the governor and her team at any time to explain what we do with the Corporation Commission and the role we've been playing in preparing for this summer.
Both Southwest Gas and TEP have, on my bill anyway, there is an area that you can do an add-on to help people who cannot afford to pay their bill. I always throw in a buck or two on that. So there is a fund, I guess, that goes to help these people that really cannot meet their bills or to assist with the bill.
There is, and thank you for that, Bill. That's very generous of you. Not only the money that we donate individually, there's federal funds called LIHEAP on the water side, LIHEAP on the electric side. There's additional programs that the utilities themselves fund. So because there's so many programs, I actually have a list in front of me here at the radio station. I always tell people, first thing you do is go to TEP.com or Southwest Gas website, whichever you're getting behind on, and notify them you have medical devices at home, perhaps, that are urgently needing electricity if we were to have an outage, or that you're having financial hardship. You might qualify for low-income programs that we have in place. There are a lot of tools. So first thing you do is contact your utility so they're aware of what's happening, knowing that you won't be disconnected, but I wouldn't wait till the end of the disconnection period to try to figure this out. We can work out payment plans now.
So getting back to where the utilities are getting the power, nuclear is playing a role, correct? We have a nuclear facility in Arizona.
Yeah, in fact, we have the largest nuclear power plant in the country, and Palo Verde Nuclear Power Plant up in the West Valley of Phoenix. Georgia's building one, so they may overtake us as the number one, but it provides about 35% of the energy in the state.
It does, yeah, 35%.
It does, so we are very dependent on nuclear energy, and it's carbon-free, clean energy source that uses reclaimed water from the Phoenix wastewater market, which is really interesting.
All right, why don't we take the break right here, and then Eddie will be up to the plate with a question for Leah Marquez-Peterson of the Arizona Corporation Commission. It's Buckmaster on a Friday. Be right back. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan as early as 2023 for public review. Learn more about the process at rtanext.com.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, our Friday Focus interview today. Leah Marquez-Peterson, Arizona Corporation Commission. She was the chair of the commission, so she's now has that experience, and she'll be announcing in a couple of months, I think, that she will be seeking re-election. Right, Leah?
I will, yeah, probably at the end of August.
You seem to really love this job.
I enjoy it. I like getting out around the state, talking to folks, and you think of the breadth of the issues we tackle, whether it's railroad crossings or electricity or your
pipelines,
electric retail co-op in your community.
Gasoline,
small
pipelines,
water utilities.
Yeah.
We also incorporate every business in the state, so that really suits my chamber background, too.
Yeah, I know when I incorporated Buckmaster Communications, LLC, I had to go through, I had my attorney do it, through the Arizona Corporation Commission. Then you get a number and you're official.
Yeah.
But you got to do that.
And businesses not to make all the attorneys mad at me, but now you don't need an attorney. You can go right to our website, azcc.gov, and complete that information. And we're part of the Business One-Stop Portal that the state of Arizona supports.
Very cool.
Very easy.
All right, let's bring in our co-media host today, Eddie Celaya of the Arizona Daily Star. Go ahead, Eddie.
So, Leah, the Rio Verde community was up north of Scottsdale. It was in the news, especially earlier at the beginning of this year. And this is kind of a two-part question. Was that kind of issue, if you will, ever resolved? And secondly, what can that sort of saga kind of teach us or inform the rest of the state about the coming crisis with water?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'll say I grew up here in Tucson water customer for, gosh, more than 40 years. Different environment around water in the Tucson region versus the Phoenix market, I would say. very much an added emphasis on drought and the quantity and quality of water in Phoenix that I know we've had for decades here in the Tucson area. The situation in Rio Verde was that they were fed through a standpipe. Think of like a big pipe standing on a, I don't know, pieces of metal that haulers come up and fill up and then go to each home to take care of those residents. And those are large properties out north of the Scottsdale area. Scottsdale, as a community, decided to stop allowing the use of their water in the standpipe. And it started kind of the water war going on up in that area. It's still ongoing. At this point, the state legislature has passed something for a short-term basis that will help take care of that standpipe. But what we're working on, so we're still involved long-term, is EPCOR, which is one of our largest regulated water utilities, and the role they'll play long-term in serving Rio Verde. So we still have a lot of residents that come and very upset. Obviously, they haven't had water in now I think it's been 6 months.
Wow.
And they've been hauling it in and trying to figure things out.
It's
been very tough. So we hear from them via email and calls and so on all the time.
Does this sort of issue kind of point towards the issue of the further issue of development and developing in areas where maybe there aren't utilities already established? Right. Is that something that maybe that community kind of jumped out on its own a little too far?
I think that's a good point, and that's the bigger conversation I hope our state legislature and our governor and so on are having, is wildcat development or development that happens further out. You know, if you're buying property, you need to be aware, are you connected to a sewer? Do you have a water line? Do you have electric lines? Do you have telecommunication lines? And if not, who's responsible for paying for that? If you're one home pretty far out from everyone else, what's the responsibility of the rest of the community to front that for you, your one home out there? And those are tough conversations to have, but I think they're more top of mind for folks nowadays with the Rio Verde issue.
Are you regulating certain water companies?
Yeah, we regulate about 400 private water utilities in the state. The largest for us is EPCOR, Liberty, Global. It's interesting, when I do a speech to a Rotary Club or so on, I ask them, how many water utilities do you think they're in the state? And if they're from Tucson, they're like five, six. But when you're rural Arizona, you realize most of those were started by developers, where, you know, grandpa might have started it years ago and now it's been passed down through the generations. But we have about 400 that we're regulating.
And that is one of the difficult situations with our shortage of water here, the sustainability. Because I don't know, are they under the same regulations of this 100-year sustainable water supply?
So they're not. That
See,
applies to commercial.
There you go. That's
but I would,
a big issue.
I would also point out the biggest issue is that we're so disjointed and so siloed in the water industry. We're just the private water utilities. There's municipal water like Tucson Water, irrigation districts. There are a lot of players in this conversation related to drought.
Mm. So, you know, you mentioned a little earlier that you would you're going to be running again for the Corporation Commission. You've run for other offices in the past. Are there any other political aspirations you have beyond the commission?
Oh, well, I ran for Congress here in the Tucson region in 2018. Great experience. That was my very first time running, and I won my primary but lost the general to Ann Kirkpatrick. And I'm a big supporter of Juan Ciscomani, so I'm happy if he's staying in that space. No need for me to run again in that regard. I've enjoyed my role at the commission because it's statewide, so I can travel and be about every corner of Arizona and work with families and small businesses and mayors and councils. So I have enjoyed that. And that's where I've got my sights set, is running for re-election for the Corporation Commission starting at the end of August, September, and hoping I can keep this seat. It is statewide, and that's always tough for folks not in Maricopa County to win statewide seats. So I'll be working hard at that. And I haven't really looked beyond that. We'll see what's next.
In a in the Arizona Corporation Commission, which, again, is a little different than like a legislative body, how much does party affiliation really affect the day-to-day, especially decision-making?
That's a good question.
Is there very much, there's one Democrat on the commission.
Yeah.
How much actual collaboration is there, and how much is there actual just like, hey, this is a good idea, let's just do it?
Yeah, I'd say it's the issues before us are not as partisan in nature. Occasionally it raises its head and we'll have headlines and so on. We can't really collaborate because we have open meeting law that applies to us. So there are five of us. I can talk to one other commissioner or partner with them on a rule or a law, but I can't gather us all together on a whiteboard, like find the solution, which drove me crazy the first month I was there, because coming from a chamber, that's how we solved a lot of things. So we have to be very careful that we're always in open meeting status, public comment, and so on.
That includes being on the phone, right?
No phones, no email chains, none of that stuff. Everything is public record.
You know, speaking of politics, you announced the launch of a political action committee to support Hispanic Republicans in 2024. Why did you do that?
Thank you for asking. So I just mentioned I ran for office here and then statewide, and just saw that, you know, we've had such divisiveness in our party, I think in both parties. Now independents are a majority of the state. I thought this was a really good time to focus on a consistent message to the Hispanic community about Republican platform issues of, you know, free markets and smaller government and free enterprise and so on. That is what I think resonates, especially with small business owners that are Hispanic. And it hadn't been consistent. I saw a lot of activity when I ran for Congress, and then it ends at the end of every election cycle. Then we launch again for the next cycle, and it ends. So I thought, this is something that I'm passionate about. I've represented the Hispanic community, business community in Southern Arizona for almost 10 years in my role at the Tucson Hispanic Chamber. So this PAC that I've just launched and have a few folks joining me on the board, and we're getting this rolling, is really about candidate recruitment, candidate training, and then raising funds to help with Latino voter turnout, as well as support for candidates in the future as we grow to that level. And it'll support candidates at the state and the federal level, but not folks within the commission, because I obviously don't want there to be a conflict.
So I'm just wondering, the Hispanic population continues to grow in Arizona. I think it's maybe
35%.
Yeah. Okay, good guess, Bill, there. All right, so I'm wondering, the representation of Hispanics in our local and state government, does it pretty much match up with that percentage or no?
I don't know the number off the top of my head for total in the state legislature, Democrat and Republican.
My guess would be lower than 35.
I think it's lower than 35, but it's grown dramatically over time. I'm particularly concerned about the Hispanic Republican vote and voice and representation, and that has not grown. So that's something that I want to try to bring folks back to the party, perhaps it might have left, or encourage and explain why people should be registered to vote and even consider running for office in the future. I think that message is missing and there's a gap. The thought is to really do this well in Arizona, and then from there to grow it beyond Arizona, even to a national platform. And something that I've committed to do long term, so that we aren't starting and stopping every election cycle.
Here's Eddie Celaya.
Why do you think, just kind of as a broad, like big 30,000-foot question, why do you think that the Republican Party has failed to make those inroads in the Hispanic and larger Mexican-American community?
Yeah, I think that both parties have really, I think, failed at truly the outreach. It's flipped the switch when we're in election cycles, right? So whether you always hear the Democrat Party, are they taking, taking advantage of the large numbers because generationally Hispanic communities are Democrat, or from the Republican side, are they just pulling out the platform as needed during every election cycle? I think having a consistent long-term voice in this effort, talking about the importance of, again, getting registered to vote and engaging, is important. When I ran the Hispanic Chamber, from a nonpartisan perspective, because that was a nonpartisan group, I would often talk to members about why it mattered who was sitting in the elected seats. And they'd say, oh, Leah, you know, I'm one vote, I'm one voice. Does it really matter? Does it make a difference? And I'd say, absolutely it does. And you need to pick up the phone and talk to your elected official, whether it's mayor or council or a commissioner, and explain issues that impact your business. I'm still very passionate about that, obviously. So I think through the PAC, we can message that to Hispanic voters throughout the state. So I'm in the process now of creating databases and raising money and so on. And that website, in case anyone's curious, is hlpac.org.
Let's go back to what Eddie was talking about, the alternative sources. And I'm wondering, what is emerging? Obviously, solar is an obvious choice for an alternative energy because we live in Arizona. How are we doing with wind? I'm wondering about some of the environmental concerns. I'm a huge animal lover, and I've heard reports about the bird population get caught up in the big wind turbines.
Yeah, that's a good question. I hear from constituents about that. Yeah. We aren't a very good wind market in Arizona,
okay.
And in fact, TP procures or buys their wind energy from New Mexico. And there are a lot, if you've driven through New Mexico anytime recently, there are a lot
by
of wind
Alamogordo
farms
in that area.
Yeah, along the the western side of New Mexico.
Yes.
So they're kind of dominating that industry, and there have been a lot of growth in that area, but not so much in Arizona. Mm-hmm. We're more of a solar state. Mm.
But what are you hearing environmentally about that?
You know, concern about, you know, birds hitting the wind turbines. I hear about recycling and the challenges we have there with the wind turbines, as well as solar panels, procuring components to continue to grow that industry because of supply chain issues.
Mm-hmm.
There isn't one energy source that is perfect.
Mm-hmm.
So whether we're going to sit and debate coal or nuclear or wind or solar, whatever it is, everything has some criticism that we're trying to work through, especially when it comes to recycling and having rare earth minerals to build some of the pieces that we need to have a renewable energy future.
Coal's future looks pretty dim, doesn't it, right now?
It's been pretty decided by the utilities. So again, not something the commission mandated, but TEP and APS have said they are exiting the coal industry 2031, 2032. So the biggest message I like to provide as a commissioner is to the community of Springerville, to the communities that have the coal plants, know that this is coming. We need to find alternative perhaps resources to build onto those coal plants or new industries to come. I've had conversations with the Arizona Commerce Authority and others. We need economic development planning now so that we don't have ghost towns where those coal plants are located by 2031.
Up on the Navajo Reservation, it's been a huge economic concern. Up in Kayenta in that area?
Exactly.
I mean, what are those people going to do that have been associated with the coal industry? They're going to be out of a job, right?
They will be. Yeah. And there are other industries and new technologies that can be embraced on the coal plant structures, but all that is in the works. And you've seen the Biden administration apply dollars towards some of that research also, and that's important.
Did you want to say something more about hydrogen? That might surprise a lot of people about hydrogen being a source.
Yeah, there's a lot of conversation. If you are listening and you're curious, I would just Google hydrogen hub. States have gathered together. In the case of Arizona, we're doing our solo with some involvement from Nevada. But they're putting these hydrogen hub proposals together to talk about the development of whether it's a pipeline or retrofitting our existing natural gas pipeline to be able to accommodate hydrogen. There's a lot of exciting technology related to that.
Where does hydrogen come from?
Oh, I don't know. I can't answer the technical question. Eddie?
I'll pass that one to Eddie. I'm just very
I did not do well
Eddie,
in science.
You're up to the plate.
So, we were talking about all these different forms of renewable energy. And I think, you mentioned earlier, we have the nation's largest nuclear power plant. And I know we said there's no perfect form of energy, but nuclear, even though it could go wrong, Three Mile Island, is there some thought to perhaps expanding our use of nuclear energy? Because that seems to be the cleanest burning.
Is there any capacity left for them to expand?
These are exactly the questions I asked as I got more involved in the commission. Our nuclear power plant now has land capacity around it, but it's billions of dollars to build a similar large-scale nuclear power plant. So I joined a committee just a couple months ago that is through my National Association for Regulated Utility Commissioners that's focused on small modular nuclear reactors and micro-reactors.
Hmm.
What that means is small scale. So imagine if you had an earthquake or you had a horrible weather event in Florida and there was no electricity on the grid, these small modular nuclear reactors could be pulled in, plugged into the grid, and then electrify them for a short period of time, or something ongoing if it were to be utilized in that capacity. Right now, Wyoming and Idaho, I believe, are the states, Utah, they're all receiving Department of Energy grants to use pilot projects on these small modular nuclear reactors. I'd say as a commissioner, there's lots of excitement about how can this be applied. But like any new energy source, it's not cost effective right now. How can it be applied? Who would pay for this? So we're in the middle of all those questions. And I hosted a workshop with the commission just a month ago where we talked about all of these various questions with nuclear energy experts.
Always fascinates me, I think, what if Three Mile Island had never happened?
Exactly.
And where would we be right now if there had not been the disaster at Three Mile Island? You wonder, would there be a lot of nuclear plants around this country?
I don't know. There are a number of them.
Over in California?
90.
They shut that one down, I think,
they
right?
They shut down a couple of them in California, but kept Diablo Canyon, open after Governor Newsom. Their governor kind of went to bat and said, we don't have a sustainable grid, I'm paraphrasing, if we don't have that nuclear power plant on short term. They didn't have the solution to keep them all electrified without the power plant operating. So it's that whole balance between a theoretical conversation on where we want our state to go, let's say in the case of California, and the reality of how do you keep the right energy mix so that we have the most important thing, reliable energy, and then affordable energy, certainly.
All right, going to have to wrap it up. Where can people reach you if they have questions, utility questions?
Sure. They can go to azcc.gov. You'll see our five pictures there of the commissioners, and just click on my headshot, and that'll shoot me an email.
Okay, great. And do you want to put another plug out for your PAC?
Sure. It's HL, which stands for Hispanic Leadership, hlpac.org, and would love to have folks join us in that regard, too.
Okay. Thank you, Leah. Good
to
see you.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Eddie.
Thank you.
All right. We'll talk with Eddie. I've got some questions for him after we take a break on the Buckmaster Show and the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Have you always wanted to cruise to Alaska? If that's the case, then you'll only see the tip of the iceberg. At Bon Voyage Travel, we can package the full Alaska experience with a cruise tour. Journey to Denali National Park on glass-domed rail cars. Tour the tundra wilderness and see the northern lights with an expert guide. And of course, relax on your cruise as you enjoy the glaciers up close and personal. Go to bvtravel.com today. Bon Voyage Travel, your Alaska experts.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Our thanks to Leah Marquez-Peterson, Arizona Corporation Commission. Always interesting. Eddie Celaya is with me from the Arizona Star. Before I give your full intro, Eddie, but it always is interesting when we have Leah on the program. The general public, most folks, have never really thought much about the Arizona Corporation Commission. But it's so darn important.
Oh, very. Oh,
because
man.
They're regulating, the power companies. And boy, I'll tell you, that's been the worry during this July for sure. Boy, let's hope we don't have a rolling blackout or the grid going down.
Amen. Yeah. I live on the second floor of my apartment complex and it would be sweltering.
Oh, I can imagine. Eddie Celaya is a breaking news reporter for the Arizona Daily Star. He is also host of the show, the podcast Here Weed Go, which focuses on cannabis. And the show has really become quite popular. It's heard all over the world, actually.
It is. It is streamed all over the world. And we actually, the last two episodes have focused in on the different markets in Missouri and Michigan. Mm. So.
How many states now have cannabis-friendly laws?
As of last month, with Maryland rolling out their new recreational program, 23 recreational, and I believe 36 that include recreational or medical programs.
And some states, though, are the other way. No way, Jose.
Some states
will not do any cannabis,
yeah,
right?
A lot of the Midwestern and Southern states. Idaho is a very, you do not want to get caught with any cannabis in Idaho.
You had a piece in the Star about a new event center that is very friendly to the cannabis enthusiast, because these folks have had, for whatever reason, I guess some people are not really wanting kind of a cannabis-friendly event going on. So there's something called the Stoned Cafe and Event Center.
It is about to open up. Next Saturday will be the opening date. It'll be an event center that has a cafe if you want to go and enjoy your coffee on the everyday. But it will also play host to quinceañeras, weddings, birthdays. And as long as you're over, quinceañeras probably not, because you have to be over 21.
Yes.
But it will be events that are cannabis friendly. You can smoke up in there. You won't be able to buy any cannabis there, but you can bring your own and enjoy yourself.
I want to talk a little bit about the community of San Manuel. Of course, it had been so associated with mining, the magma copper. Roots go very deep in that community, but when copper kind of went away, the town, 45 miles northwest of Tucson, really fell on hard times. But cannabis is kind of is playing a role in the resurgence of this community.
It really is. The Flower Shop, which is a chain of dispensaries up in Phoenix with two in Utah, they opened up their big grow facility out in San Manuel. And it's kind of just been slowly getting going for about the last year. But in the last few months, they've reached pretty much capacity. And the 100,000 square foot facility that they have out there, it is extremely impressive. And it employs, I believe, about 100, maybe a little bit more of folks in San Manuel and around that greater San Manuel community.
100 jobs in San Manuel? That's good news.
That's a pretty good amount. And, there's room for that facility to get larger. It's 100,000 square feet currently underneath the roof, but there is enough actual land out there for them to put 50 to 75,000 square foot more out there.
And they are growing marijuana.
They're growing a ton of marijuana out there. I believe they said something along the lines of 60,000 pounds every month.
Who is regulating these growing farms?
So those are all under the auspice of Arizona, the Arizona Health Services Department, and they really are the ones that are looking in and regulating everything. Some other states will have a dedicated department for that, but here in Arizona, it's AZDHS.
Has marijuana been a big boon to the coffers of Arizona state government?
Man, yeah. Last year, $1.3 billion in sales. The tax dollars, I forget right off the top of my head, but it's something they expect to see at least $1.8 billion this year. So you can imagine that the taxes they're bringing in are pretty good.
I imagine illegal marijuana coming into the state has really dried up, Eddie Zelaya.
Illegal marijuana from Mexico has really dried up.
Yes.
Illicitly grown marijuana within the state and maybe from other states is the main problem for the industry within the state. The illicitly grown stuff usually is cheaper because it's not subject to taxes and it doesn't have to go through the mandatory testing regime. But in Arizona, we're not having anywhere near the problems with the illicit market that you see in California, Washington, Oregon, Nevada, more established states with, I'll just say it, larger grow operations.
How does TSA approach marijuana at the airport? Is there some kind of,
That's actually touching on one of my early episodes of Here Weed Go.
Okay.
The TSA, I spoke with the director in charge of the Southwest region. My understanding is the TSA is telling you, hey, do not bring that through your check bags or anything.
Yeah.
However, that's not the priority of what they're looking for. They're really looking more for explosives, money, and things like that. Small recreational amounts of cannabis, probably not something that's going to send an alarm off. However, if they do catch you with it, here in Tucson, they'll just call the Tucson police and they'll be like, hey, call somebody to come pick it up. You can't get on the plane.
Mm-hmm.
But if you were to get caught in a state where it's not legal, you could be looking at
like
some
you were
real,
saying Idaho is
yeah you'd be looking
very
at,
unfriendly to marijuana.
Yeah, I could you'd probably be looking at as well as state charges, federal charges, because you're ultimately the TSA is
sure.
is a federal thing. So
all right, so much information there, and Eddie, you do a great job with the podcast Here Weed, WEED Go. How can they listen to the podcast?
You can find the podcast anywhere you stream anything, so any like Google Play or Audible or Apple Podcasts, you can find it there. You can also find it at the Arizona Daily Star's website at tucson.com.
Okay, we'll look for your work concerning cannabis, and also you've been very busy covering breaking news.
That's right.
For the Arizona Daily Star, and you'll be with our listeners, 4 weeks from today, you'll be seated here in the big chair as you get your first crack at hosting the Buckmaster Show.
I can't wait.
Take a break right here. Weekend Watch with Matt Russell next.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax The RTA tax is collected throughout Pima County and averages about $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation projects in the region. The RTA tax funds priority projects that were approved by voters in 2006. See details in the latest RTA annual report at rtamobility.com. The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
And away we go. It's time for a weekend watch presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. You know what they say about Silver City, the Buckmaster Show. Summer guarantee. It's going to be 10 degrees at least cooler in Silver City. And look at that midday temperature, 94 degrees. And actually, some of those overnight lows, upper 50s? Oh, that sounds too good to be true. Start your planning now for your three-hour drive over to Silver City by visiting their website, southwestnewmexico.org. The longtime host of Weekend Watch, award-winning Tucson publicist and dedicated foodie, Mr. Matt Russell. Hey, Matt, how are you?
Well, I'm doing great. You know, truth be told, I'll be stirring it up here shortly for the suggestions of your bumper music. So, yes, thanks for asking.
Well, you have been known to maybe start the Friday cocktail hour at during the noon hour at 12:50 in the afternoon. Anyway, any activities to kind of hang out on a summer night?
Yeah, you bet. You know, today is the last Friday of the month, which means it's the summer night market over at the MSA Annex. More than 60 local vendors are going to be on site at this shipping crate retail village just off of Congress Street west of I-10. And they're going to have their arts and crafts and other goods. And many of the MSA Annex shops, including those wonderful restaurants, Bill, they're going to be extending their hours and staying open late. So you'll find some great burger and taco and sushi joints, along with artisan bakers and coffee roasters. And I should say, Augustine Kitchen, which is one of my absolute favorite restaurants in town, is just steps away. So eat, drink, and shop under the stars tonight from 6 to 10 at the MSA Annex.
One of the fun events when I was working covering news up in the San Francisco Bay Area was the South Bay community of Gilroy, and they did an annual garlic festival. Always enjoyed that. The garlic fans would come from all over the country. Well, it looks like we're going to do our own garlic festival here in town.
You better believe it. It's an entire event dedicated to what's lovingly referred to as the stinking rose. It is the annual garlic festival at Mission Garden tomorrow morning from 8 to 11. You're going to enjoy freshly baked loaves of garlic bread from the hands of James Beard award-winning baker Don Guerra. You're going to have tastings of Chinese, Italian, and Mexican garlic, which they're going to do three different ways, raw, sauteed, and roasted. And some farmers will be on hand to sell their own garlic. And local chefs, Bill, they're going to be there as well doing garlic cooking demonstrations. And then you can beat the heat with samples of some garlic ice cream. Yeah, you heard me, Bill. You know, vampires will obviously be sleeping in a little late tomorrow morning. So follow your nose and head over to the garlic festival.
Let's end Weekend Watch with something sweet. What do you say, Matt?
You know, one of the culinary techniques that I never seem to master is the art of piping, where you introduce soft cheeses and creams to dishes as a garnish or a filling. Well, here's my chance to learn from the pros. Song and Sugar Sweet, the Tucson Mall. They're going to be hosting a special piping class tomorrow from 5 to 7 p.m., and this one is all about buttercream. So, ooh. Bill, during the class, you're going to get the basics on filling a piping bag and then learn general and advanced piping techniques, and you'll be taking home your own two-layer cake decorated with the piped buttercream that you did yourself. It sounds like a class that my fellow foodies surely won't want to miss.
My sweet tooth just told me I'm on my way. All right, Matt, have a great weekend. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, you do the same. Thanks, Bill.
All right, the Buckmaster Show is a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, which is wholly responsible for the content of our program. Our thanks to everybody here at KVOI, including my engineer and producer, Tom Fairbanks, the entire team here at Bustos Media Tucson. All of us have the same wish for you. Be well, everybody. Stay safe. Have a lovely weekend.